Radio Prague News.
President Václav Klaus has signed the government's tax reform bills into law. The Czech authorities will appeal a Swiss court's rejection of their bid to join the ongoing criminal case against former managers of the Mostecká uhelná firm. And over 55,000 Czechs have added their signatures to a call for Prague's international airport to be renamed after the late Václav Havel. President Václav Klaus on Tuesday signed a series of bills related to the government's tax reform. The new legislation introduces a joint collection authority where people will pay their taxes along with health and social insurance. It also replaces the 15% income tax calculated from the so-called super gross salary with a new 19% tax calculated from base salary. The bills also include an amendment to the Czech legislation on lotteries, which gives local authorities more power in regulating gambling. The government's tax reform is set to come into force in 2015. However, Finance Minister Miroslav Kalousek would like to amend it so that it comes into effect a year earlier. The Czech authorities will appeal against a Swiss court's decision to reject their bid to become a party in the ongoing criminal case against former managers of the mining firm Mostecká uhelná. The newspaper Lidové noviny said on Tuesday, quoting a spokesman for the Czech finance ministry. The Swiss federal court in Belin zone rejected the Czech bid on the 19th of December. According to a local press report, the Czech authorities have 10 days to appeal. Six Czechs and one Belgian citizen have been charged with money laundering and other financial crimes in the case of Mostecká uhelná. The firm was privatized in 1999, but Swiss prosecutors believe the managers paid for the firm's shares with money siphoned from the company, embezzling billions of crowns. The Swiss authorities estimate the damages to the Czech Republic at 3.4 billion crowns, Lidové noviny said. The police might look into the Czech Communist Party chairman's condolence to North Korean communists on the death of the dictator Kim Jong-il, the Lidové noviny reported on Tuesday. The paper quotes Czech Justice Minister Jiří Pospíšil as saying the authorities should determine whether Vojtěch Filip, the head of the Communist Party of Bohemia and Moravia, broke the law by expressing sympathies to the late North Korean leader. In his letter of condolence, Mr. Wojciech said Kim Jong-il sacrificed himself for the well-being of the North Korean people, adding he believed the North Korean Communist Party would continue leading the heroic struggle for the defense of socialism. If convicted of breaching the Czech law prohibiting support for totalitarian movements and regimes, the Czech Communist leader would face up to 3 years in jail. More than 55,000 Czechs, both at home and living abroad, have added their signatures to a call for Prague's international airport to be renamed after the late ex-president Václav Havel. According to the news website idnes.cz, the idea has received backing even from Mr. Havel's family. However, Czech Finance Minister Miroslav Kalousek, whose office is in charge of the airport, said a thorough debate was needed before a decision could be reached. Former President Václav Havel died at the age of 75 on the 18th of December after a protracted illness. In neighbouring Poland, the northern city of Gdańsk named one of its streets after Mr. Havel on the 23rd of December, the day of his funeral. Czech Airlines will add another 71 return flights to Russia in the holiday season, a spokeswoman for the carrier told reporters on Tuesday. The first extraordinary flight will leave Prague on the 28th of December, the last on the 12th of January. 47 of the extra seasonal flights will go to and from Moscow. Other destinations include St. Petersburg, Rostov-on-Don, Yekaterinburg and Samara. And finally, a brief look at the weather. The next few days will be overcast with frequent fog. Daytime highs should range between 2 and 6 degrees Celsius. My name is Andrej Richter and it's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's show, the Archbishop of Prague serves a special Christmas Mass for the Vietnamese minority and the environmental damage caused by the nation's traditional Christmas dinner of fried carp, tons of fried oil clogging up wastewater facilities. In this week's Czech History, a closer look at the Czechoslovak legions, and we'll end as usual with a Czech lesson. Stay with us. One of the many Christmas masses celebrated over the past weekend was a mass for the Vietnamese community celebrated by Prague Archbishop Dominik Duka in Prague's Žižkov district. It was dedicated to the Feast of the Holy Family and attended by over 1,000 Vietnamese who have embraced the Christian faith. There are over 60,000 Vietnamese scattered around the country, while most profess allegiance to Buddhism or Taoism, around 10% of them have embraced the Christian faith and traditionally celebrate Christmas with a majority population. 6 years ago, the Catholic Church launched the tradition of serving a special Christmas Mass for the Vietnamese community, to which people flock from around the country. This year, the Mass was served by the Archbishop of Prague, Dominik Duka, and devoted to the Feast of the Holy Family. The Archbishop said that in the close-knit Vietnamese community, this is a message that strikes an instant rapport, moreover at a time of economic uncertainty.
Many people are concerned about the impacts of a possible recession. How will I manage on my pension? Who will give me a helping hand in the event of illness? And it is clear that people who do not have a family to rely on will be much worse off.
Christmas in Vietnam has had a tumultuous history. The Catholics are a minority dating back to the days of French rule, but they were left to celebrate Christmas freely until the communists took power in 1975. After that, relations between the church and state soured, and Catholics were relegated to celebrating Jesus' birthday in the privacy of their homes. Those abroad remain close-knit, and the Catholic Church is happy to meet their needs with an individual Mass, for the Vietnamese Mass has certain specific rituals foreign to Czech believers, Archbishop Dominik Duka.
The Catholic Vietnamese community adds color, which the Czech Catholic Church is happy to embrace.
While most Czechs enjoy a Christmas dinner of fried carp, the Vietnamese community generally favors turkey as the main Christmas dish. But the remaining traditions, especially present giving, are identical, not least because many Vietnamese children born here are as Czech as they are Vietnamese. And as I just said, the traditional Czech Christmas dinner is fried carp, and it's a well-known fact that this dinner is a heavy burden on the digestive system. Fewer people know, though, that fat is not only bad for the gallbladder and arteries, but can also cause problems to the sewage system, especially in densely populated areas. The sewage pipes and sewage treatment plants experience something of a fat overdose at Christmas time. The problem is faced by all cities, and some have already taken measures against it. Pavla Horáková has more.
Fatty foods are part of the typical Czech diet all year round, but the Christmas holidays are a genuine fat feast. On Christmas Eve, most Czech families eat fried carp. According to the Czech Fish Farmers Association, over 4,000 tons of live fish are sold in the Czech Republic before Christmas, 350,000 fish in Prague alone. In hundreds of thousands of kitchens around the country, all those fish are fried in oil at approximately the same time. On Christmas Day, the situation is repeated with roast duck and goose served in many households. After the festive dinner, in most cases, the grease is poured down the drain. That causes problems, especially in winter. As it cools down, grease in the pipes curdles into lumps and mixes with other impurities, such as hair and potato peels, blocking the pipes and putting further strain on sewage treatment plants where it can jam the pumps. In sewage treatment plants, part of the clotted grease is skimmed and lumps of grease are shoveled out of the tanks. Miroslav Novák describes the situation at the sewage treatment plant in the city of České Budějovice, which has a population of over 90,000.
We collect some 9 to 10 tons of fat from the system during the Christmas holidays.
za ty vánoční svátky.
Sewage treatment plants around the country are on alert at Christmas time, ready for extra work and costs, and so are other workers in sewage utilities. Cooking oils and animal fat from roasting clogs up street sewer pipes as well, as Jitka Kramářová from the water and sewage utility in České Budějovice comments.
We have already cleaned three sewage lines and one blocked sewage shaft.
Few people are aware of the fact that disposing of fat in the drain is actually prohibited. Some towns and cities have distributed special containers for kitchen grease. In Ostrava, people are encouraged to store their used fat in bottles and bring them to waste collection points for recycling. 5 to 10 liters of household cooking fat is collected every month in special bins in the town of Chrudim, according to the local authorities. Although in České Budějovice the locals seem to largely ignore the 8 used fat containers, the municipal authority is planning to increase their number around the city. The České Budějovice sewage treatment plant says it will now take at least a week to get rid of all the Christmas grease in the tanks. Unless the locals learn to use the fat recycling bins, the situation will repeat again next Christmas, as the typical Czech Christmas menu is not likely to change dramatically anytime soon.
Pavla Horáková there on the hazards of the Czech Christmas menu. A reminder that you're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Now, if you heard our report on the late President Václav Havel's last journey through Prague, you may have noticed that among the troops following his casket were soldiers bearing the historic flags of the Czechoslovak legions. Well, if that stumped you, Chris Johnstone may have the answer in this edition of Czechs in History.
The Czechoslovak legions were a potent myth and reality for the first Czechoslovak Republic created in 1918. Many of their military leaders filled the top ranks of the new nation's army. Some finally went over the edge, creating anti-democratic parties and siding with the Nazi occupiers at the end of the 1930s. Physical landmarks, such as Prague's Most Legie, is named after them, although it was constructed earlier and the name was changed during the Nazi and communist regimes. A memorial to the legionnaires also dominates Prague's Palatsky Square. One of the city's interwar architectural masterpieces, the bank founded for the returning legionnaires, Banka Československých Legie, or Ligo Banka, is a Rondo Cubist masterpiece by the celebrated Czech architect Josef Gočár. But it is perhaps at the psychological level that the foundations go deeper. More about that later. From the start of World War I, Czechs abroad started to form national units to fight on the Allied side. Small at first, their numbers and significance started to snowball when they were supplemented by prisoners and deserters from the Austro-Hungarian army fighting alongside Germany. All this fitted in well with the strategy of Tomáš G. Masaryk, the leader of Czechoslovakia's independence movement and later first president. Ivan Šedivý is a specialist in modern Czechoslovak history at Prague's Charles University.
State cannot be without army. And so in many articles he wrote that Czech movement against Austro-Hungary needs its independent army forces. And so Masaryk tried to create such an army forces not only in Russia, but very soon also in France. And at the end of the war also in Italy and also in the United States.
But the Russian Revolution in 1917 represented a major hurdle to this plan. While the newly established independent Czechoslovak force proved its fighting worth in the offensive of Alexander Kerensky's provisional government, that government was soon overturned by the Bolshevik Revolution, with Lenin opting for peace. The Czechoslovak forces wanted to carry on fighting and now face the challenge of how to get to France. Their way back west and to the northern Baltic ports was blocked by German armies. They faced the choice of a hazardous trip south towards the Middle East or further east along the Trans-Siberian Railway to the port of Vladivostok. They opted for the latter route and what was to become a 3-year odyssey. Unfortunately, they soon became caught up in the civil war between the Bolshevik government centred on Moscow and opposition forces backed by the Allies, who were angered by Lenin's unilateral exit from the war. Ivan Shedevy again.
At the beginning, Masaryk didn't want to fight the legions against the Soviet Bolsheviks. But after the so-called Chelyabinsk incident in May 1918, when fightings between Bolsheviks and legionaries started, the Czech legionaries fight with so-called white forces, fight against Bolsheviks, but I think it was not crucial for us to win this war.
The Czechoslovak Legion represented a well-organized and potent fighting force which occupied large swathes of Siberia. It made use of armoured trains along the railway to ferry forces to key points. Its imminent arrival is believed to have contributed to the decision by local Bolsheviks to execute the Tsar and his family at Ekaterinburg in July 1918. But even so, it was still a fairly small force.
At this time, the Czech corps has about, let's say, 70,000 Czech soldiers and about 30,000 Russian soldiers. So together it was corps about 100,000. So it wasn't for us which would be able to defeat Bolsheviks, in fact.
The Czech forces also became disillusioned with one of the main White Army generals, Admiral Kolchak.
The Czech attitude towards Kolchak, towards Kolchak government, rapidly changed during the time. At the beginning, from 1918, the Czech legions crucially supported Kolchak's forces. He created his government with Czech help, you know. But then, yes, Kolchak wasn't itself Democrat, and he created the government with Cossacks and Ottomans helps also. So his government wasn't so much democratic. So Czech forces started to be neutral in fighting on Siberia.
The Legion even paved the way for Kolchak's capture and execution by Bolshevik forces at the start of 1920. The most intriguing story about the Czechoslovak Legion's Siberian journey concerns the rumours that they kept one of 8 wagons of the Tsar's gold after the rest were handed over to the Bolsheviks as part of the deal to get home. Professor Shedevy.
Nowadays we can read in many Russian newspapers that this gold was stolen to the Czechoslovakia. To tell the truth, there are no evidence that it was so. On the other side, nobody can argue that it wasn't.
He says a telegram found in the archives talking about the transport of a gold cargo, ostensibly for medical use, through the port of Trieste for Czechoslovakia, lends some support to the Tsarist gold story. But the Czechoslovak Legion had branched out into many money-spinning ventures during its time in Siberia, and the gold could have stemmed from them.
Czechoslovak Legions had very wide economic infrastructure. It had its financial office, and this financial office made during the Siberia period very broad scale of great business with products and, of course, also great business with currency and with gold. So it's possible that many financial and gold resources later deposited in so-called Bank of Czechoslovak Legions, established in, I think, in 1920. These resources were mostly from its economic transaction of Czechoslovak Legions, not from this gold of Tsarist family. We must have in mind that the Legions were approximately 3 years in Siberia. They made business with Russia, with the Chinese, with Japanese, and so on, you know. Even more, they obtained some part of monies from some soldiers.
World War I was long over by the time the last members of the Czechoslovak Legion shipped out of Vladivostok by April 1920. Many of the newly returned found posts in the army, with their long combat service a major factor in their favour.
They created approximately one-third of all men of new created Czechoslovak army, but they absolutely prevail in high command. Almost all generals, a great part of generals were legions, especially Russia legions, such persons like General Syrový.
General Jan Syrový became a four-star general and Czechoslovak Army Chief of Staff. He also served as reluctant Prime Minister during the Munich crisis in 1938. For Professor Šedivý, the colourful stories of the exiled Czechoslovak forces provided a powerful image of the independent struggle during the First Republic. Later on, after the capitulation of Munich and later Nazi occupation, communist takeover in 1948 and Soviet-led invasion of 1968, it provided Czechs with one clear example of national military exploits. The uncomfortable fact, though, is that far more Czechs and Slovaks died during World War I on the Austro-Hungarian side fighting the Allies than in the small military units that fought alongside them.
There's a little comparison. For instance, all legions were killed, about 5,000 during the war. And on the other side was killed about 150,000, I think, even more maybe, on the other Austro-Hungary, of the other Austro-Hungarian army. In fact, Czech people didn't fight like one man against Austro-Hungary. In fact, it was only a part of nation fighting against the Austro-Hungary.
But there again, as the saying goes, it's the winner who writes history. And after World War I, Czechoslovakia was clearly on the winning side.
That edition of Czechs in History by Chris Johnston was first aired in August of 2010. And now it's time to offer you another Czech lesson. You had to miss out on all your Czech lessons last week in view of the country's period of mourning for Václav Havel. But today we're offering you a Christmassy lesson with Pavla Horáková.
Welcome to a Christmas edition of Soundcheck. Today we'll hear the traditional Christmas carol Dej Bůh štěstí tomu domu, or Let God Bring Good Luck to This House. The phrase to listen out for is Dát požehnání, or Give Blessings. The song was traditionally sung by carolers who pray that God should bring good luck to the particular house to which they came caroling. They say they are singing for little baby Jesus, born today in Bethlehem. In the song, baby Jesus gives them Christmas bread, apples, pears, and little coins in return for their singing. In the final verse, the carol singers pray that God should give his blessings to the house. Dej vám Pán Bůh svý požehnání. Dát požehnání literally means to give blessings. To bless is požehnat. Traditionally, young people ask their parents for požehnání before getting married. A blessed person is požehnaný člověk. To say about a woman that she is v požehnaném stavu, in a blessed state, means that she's expecting a baby. You can also say about a person, dožil se požehnaného věku. He lived to a ripe old age. But back to dát požehnání, give blessings. Here's the phrase once again. Finally, a very nice form of Christmas greeting is to wish someone požehnané Vánoce, a blessed Christmas. That's all for today's lesson, which can also be found both in sound and text on our website, radio.cz. Merry Christmas.
That edition of Soundcheck with Pavla Horáková, and I'm afraid that's brought us to the end of today's programme. You'll find us online at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz. This is Danielle Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today and goodbye.